Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Days of Our Lives is getting life beyond daytime hours lately, thanks to Peacock, NBC Universal's mega content enterprise. After a Beyond Salem miniseries this summer, A Very Salem Christmas arrived there yesterday. What's next? Emmy-winning executive producer Ken Corday joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. New season, new home for When Calls the Heart offshoot When Hope Calls. Season 2 of this family-designated movie, or family western series, excuse me, moves from Hallmark Movies Now to GAC Family tomorrow night. You'll hear executive producer Brian Bird at the top of the hour. And Here TV has a new adventure series brewing called Demon Hunter. Here with us for our final 30 minutes, executive producer Tim O'Leary and the co-star and producer Robert Rice. Also ahead, GameStar Plus's funding rush, a paper heart from Tubi, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you with us 30 minutes earlier than usual for the program about TV's current and future. 59 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Delighted you're with us. Got a bunch of great guests coming away over the next hour and a half. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone? No problem. Use our chat room anytime you like. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions of being live with you. Ken Corday from Days of Our Lives and the new Days of Our Lives movie on Peacock, A Very Salem Christmas, who join us live from L.A. after these news notes. Home stretch time for crowdfunding at GameStar Plus, the proposed interactive TV service, with Steve Harvey as investor and spokesperson. Going to its final weekend at WeFunder.com, GameStar Plus has raised more than $5 million. The campaign wraps Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tubi's next original attraction is set to debut tomorrow. Fox's multi-channel bundle will premiere Paper Heart, a made-for-TV movie adaptation of the popular novel, with novelist Keisha Evans co-writing the adaptation. Paper Heart features several unscripted series in its cast, including Donald Brumfield Jr. from VH1's popular Black Ink Crew, Chicago. Now time for quickies. True TV's Fast Foodies series begins season 2 January 27th. Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart reunite on Peacock for a 2021 retrospective special December 28th. Hulu raised the curtain on season 10 of long-running Canadian sitcom Letterkenny on December 26th. Former CSI producer Carol Mendelson is developing a pair of procedural series, one legal at NBC, the other a crime saga for CBS. On a sad note, Here Come the Brides and Harper Valley PTA co-star Bridget Hanley has passed away. She was 80. Apparently, she was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And for the 100th time, there she is, Miss America. In this case, Emma Broyles from Alaska, crowned last night. Broyles will serve as Miss A through 2022 and receive $100,000 in scholarships. And that's news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in an interview exclusive, the Emmy Award-winning executive producer of Days of Our Lives, Ken Corday. Ken, it is wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks, Simon. Good morning, and how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. So what do you make of Peacock becoming a new playground for your series?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's the future. And it's very supportive of Peacock to come to a broadcast entity like Days that's been on so many years, 56 years, and say, okay, we want to do some special things on the Peacock from Days of Our Lives. It's just it's very refreshing.
How did the conversation start, Ken, where you're able to do first a miniseries and then this movie?
Well, it always starts with the buyer, with NBC Peacock coming to us and saying, okay, what do you think of this? Can you come up with something like this? And, you know, we do our best to make them happy. But the idea for the platform comes from Peacock.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to Christmas shows, you know, you've been in the business with daytime drama and Days of Our Lives for 50 6-plus years of doing Christmas episodes. Was there anything about doing those episodes that made you think, okay, if we ever get a chance to do a made-for-TV movie about the holiday, here's what we want to do?
Well, yes, we'd always wanted to do a Christmas movie, you know, a special, until the order was placed and, okay, we're ready for one. We didn't have the specifics of how to do it, and our head writer, Ron Carlovati, came up very quickly with the idea for A Very Salem Christmas.
And what was the idea?
Well, the idea was basically it's like a conglomeration of a lot of Christmas movies you've seen before with a twist, you know, based on familiar characters from Days of Our Lives, but in a kind of other time, otherworldly place.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of fantasy.
In developing this, did you want to focus on one specific plot and see how different characters would fit in, or did you want to do multiple storylines, multiple arcs, and see how they would go in the course of the film?
This one was one specific plot, one specific storyline, with characters from days that you knew, that the viewers knew. But it, you know, it's very, very much, there's a very big twist in the whole thing, is everyone's with the wrong person at the beginning of the movie. I don't want to tell you more than that, but, you know, how does that get resolved? Mm-hmm. All the couples are mixed up, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. How do you juggle the balls between a 5-day-a-week show, an hour a day, and doing a 2-hour movie where you have to maybe do some on-location work? You have to have characters bounce back and forth between the movie plot and the ongoing plot of days, as well as the post-production time.
How do I juggle it? I think I need a few more arms, but Lord knows we have such a great production team and a great cast. We just had to do it. We had to kind of fit it in and stop the normal production on days for a few days, but we move quickly here, and with a good script, it's just a matter of a director and the cast wrapping their head around it, and let's go, let's get this done in a few days. And we did.
Did you shoot on location? Did you try to find, let's say, like this would be the find somewhere near where you shoot in Los Angeles or in California, and like this is like the perfect place we can use for a Christmas town or Salem?
You know, Simon, in this one, as opposed to the series Beyond Salem, we did not use exterior locations. We had establishing shots, you know, of the town, but we did not actually take the actors out on location for many reasons, obviously the most important being, you know, the protocols with pandemic and how do you clear that and do it quickly. And we had very little time to do this.
You're hearing Ken Corday. He is the Emmy-winning executive producer of Days of Our Lives, one of the longest-running daytime drama series in the history of the medium. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. And in addition to Days of Our Lives, which run 5 days a week, weekday afternoons on your local NBC station, now there is a made-for-TV movie of Days, the first one ever, called A Very Salem Christmas, that premiered yesterday on Peacock. That's NBC's mega content service. It's available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and in some cases, through your local cable system. And if you have a question or comment for Ken, ring that phone, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up next week, we'll be with you Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 20th, 22nd, 23rd, our special Christmas week triple header of Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming away on Monday, we will find out what Hub Entertainment Research has to say about how 2022 television will go. We'll speak with Principal John Geigengack. And we're bringing back, now that his hip-hop culture service Polaris is now running on Vizio Smart TV sets, we'll have Raman J. Dugas, the former MTV executive. He'll be with us again. Polaris just launched this week on Vizio Smart TV sets as part of their ongoing bundle of original channels features. So be sure to join us. That's coming up on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here. First of our triple header Christmas week on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. Ken, do you see that, did you and your writers and your fellow producers see this movie as, for example, the kind of Christmas movie where you, let's say, you've always wanted to do this on Days of Our Lives, but you couldn't? For example, I remember growing up, I watched Days, I watched Edge of Night, I watched Search for Tomorrow, all the classic daytime dramas. And I remember that Edge of Night, which was my favorite at the time, sort of zagged where Days and others zigged. If others would have the typical Christmas scene, Edge of Night would kill off a main character, you know, at the end of the Christmas episode. Like, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Did you writers enjoy the idea of using this movie to do, like, here's all the things we wanted to do for Christmas episodes that now we can do in this movie?
Yes. Yes, and yes again. We're able to, with this movie, kind of spread our wings, take more time to develop a week before Christmas, Christmas Eve, a time clock, so to speak, and not have to do it on a day-to-day basis. It's a one-time thing. And, with characters, again, I'm repeating myself, with characters, you know, the story of On Days, and in this movie it appears, well, you know, this is not what I've been watching on Days, what's going on? So you have to stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. How did the cast adjust to the idea of doing the movie?
I'm sorry?
How did the cast members adjust to the idea of doing a film, of doing a holiday movie?
Oh, they loved it. They're extremely enthusiastic about this project and embraced it as did all of production. And, you know, loved it. Loved being able to play characters that are different, you know, the same character, but components and personalities, so to speak, were different in a very Salem Christmas than we would see day to day, you know, in conjunction with broadcast television.
Mm-hmm. Did you invite your writers or invite your cast members to sort of bring their recollections of Christmas growing up or their recollections of Christmas currently into their characters?
We didn't overtly invite them. The head writer, Ron Carlovati, and Ron Kwan had this in mind, you know, okay, you know, what special things do we want? What can we bring of ourselves to the story? You know, the cast is basically given the script and saying, okay, run with this and sing it your way, but do sing the notes that we've written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go back to the miniseries Beyond Salem. What kind of feedback did you get from the audience about the miniseries? What did people like about it? What kind of constructive things they had to say about it? And how did you use that, if anything, into making A Very Salem Christmas?
Well, Beyond Salem was a different kind of project in that, you know, it spanned, it was 5 hours and 5 episodes. And the response was, in direct answer to your question, your response was very positive. Peacock was thrilled with it. We were thrilled with it. So, you know, the model was kind of set in and stone. Okay, this is what works. And then when the idea of the Christmas movie came up, we were a little short on time and didn't want to make it a 5-episode movie. So we said, okay, let's, you know, do it all in one. And, you know, based on popularity of Beyond Salem, let's see if we can parlay that into a Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, Days is a very special side of television because your parents created the show, Ted and Betty Corday. You then came into the fold. What's it been like for you these decades to spearhead a program that your parents put together and turned into such a long-running favorite?
Well, of course, it's, you know, it's legacy. So for me, it's a matter of pride and a matter of being the custodian of kind of a priceless piece of American television. It's been a long time since Ted and Betty were involved with the show. My father passed before the show was a year old in 1966, and my mother in 1987. So, you know, fortunately, I'm extremely fortunate that I've been able to, you know, carry the ball forward these last almost 40 years. It's a family show. It's a family business, and that's the number one thing we look for in the telling of Days of Our Lives or any other special that comes out of it, is how it centers around family.
How does family play into the series now compared to, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago when it became your baby?
Well, you know, it's still basically the same. You know, we have 3 or 4 core families on the show. And now we're into great-grandchildren with those, you know, pioneer characters. It still is important. It will never lose its importance. You don't reinvent the wheel when it's working, and those families have always worked ever since their inception, Hortons at the beginning, and then Brady's and Damaris in the 80s, and on we go. You know, you have to pay respect to that and realize, you know, people watching now, we're in almost fifth generation of viewers, want to see those families and their children, children's children, you know.
By the way, one of the things that Days has been known for a long time also has been the is not being afraid to put humor in to a daytime drama. I still remember, I believe, Arlene Sorkin, when she was on the show, that very famous scene where she's going to a restaurant with somebody, I think it's a date, and these violins are playing, and they're playing really loud, and they're like, and she goes, "Shut up!" And I think that shocked a lot of people, because you didn't expect a daytime drama character. It was like she was breaking out of character, like, you know, oh my God, the violins are playing again. It's like a stereotype of drama, so let's like, you know, go crazy with this kind of thing. And I'm wondering what your thought is about humor, because it seemed that was a turning point for Days and a turning point for daytime dramas also, in the fact that, hey, you could be humorous, you could be funny, you can poke fun at yourself.
Right, well said. Arlene Sorkin and her co-star John DeLancey, who played Calliope and Eugene, were really the first on the show to, almost to the point of slapstick, play the humor side of it. It created great balance for the other dramas and the, you know, mysteries on the show, but more importantly, it set the tone for, okay, we can do this, we can continue to do this, we still have characters that are doing this, but, you know, they were the first, and it was so wild and crazy, especially with Arlene Sorkin, that, you know, the directors would just say to the cameraman, "I don't know what's going to happen here. Follow it. We're not making it up as we go along, but as far as blocking goes and how she's going to play the scene and where she's going to move or where John DeLancey is going to move, just go with the flow." And it was wild and crazy, but so much fun, and still is. It's so wonderful to have comic relief in a daytime drama.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I think does not get enough either attention or acknowledgement from the TV community is the writing of these shows. You know, there have been a lot of good writers who have, over the years, done marvelous work in daytime, including some primetime writers. I still remember Henry Slezar, one of the great mystery writers of all time. He did scripts for the Alfred Hitchcock Presents show and Alfred Hitchcock Hour. Some of the stories were adapted on Twilight Zone. And then there's Edge of Night. He's also one of the first people to win an Emmy for work on daytime television. And what he did on that show, and to do it, you know, for writers like that and like your writers, to do what they do 5 days a week, an hour a day, is really extraordinary stuff. Do you feel now that writers are getting more due that for the kind of work they do, and more importantly, the quality of work they do?
I'd like to feel they are, Simon. The writer is the most important talent, most important person on the show, because it starts with the blank page, and the good writers learn the show, they know the past, they play off it, but their job is the most difficult, the most important, you know, and our head writers are writing 6 shows a week now, because we tape somewhere between 7 and 8 shows a week, so they have to stay ahead of the curve. That, you know, that's a huge order to write 6 hours a week, yet they do it, and they do it well. But have they been given enough due recognition? I never think so, but, you know, the guilds understand, the academy understands the importance, and recognition is given there. It's just, you know, they're the silent force behind the show. They're not on camera. They're not in the studio, their home, or, you know, in an office somewhere coming up with these amazing ideas. And it's a wonderful job, and sometimes lonely, but it is, without a doubt, the most difficult job on the show.
A Very Salem Christmas, the first Days of Our Lives original made-for-TV movie, is now playing on Peacock. It's NBC's mega-content service, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and in some areas it's also available on your local cable system. We're speaking with Emmy Award executive producer Ken Corday of Days of Our Lives and this made-for-TV movie, and a miniseries that placed on Peacock earlier this year called Beyond Salem. And he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you have a question or comment for him before our meeting minutes with him, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On our next special Wednesday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised next week, we'll kick it off with the general manager of another mega content service that's really coming on strong called Topic. You'll hear from Ryan Kinetry, who will be with us. Then we'll have some more predictions of what 2022 TV might bring from the chief product officer of technology firm Wide Orbit, Will Opperman. And finally, we'll talk to an entrepreneur who has just become host and producer of an original TV special called Healing Through the House. It's very unusual, and it's now playing on Roku, and she's also been able to get on other smart TV sets and devices. Her name is Rebecca Kitana. You'll meet this very unique entrepreneur, along with our other guests, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, our regular time, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Any thoughts, Ken, about where you want to take Days as far as Peacock goes? Do you want to see other made-for-TV movies, maybe a full, a regular spinoff? What's your thoughts about what next year could bring for Days?
All of the above, Simon. I would love to see us do, Days do quarterly specials for Peacock, short-term series like Beyond Salem. I've always wanted to do a spinoff of the show and have specific ideas about that. But, there's an appetite and there certainly is appreciation for what we do at Peacock. So, sky's the limit here. One doesn't know what 2022 holds, but I would hope it holds more of what we've had this year next.
Are you hearing from your fellow daytime drama producers elsewhere that they see, whether it's Peacock or it's Hulu or it's Disney Plus or it's Netflix, that these services could also give them an opportunity to expand their franchises?
To be honest with you, I have not heard from the other daytime producers about this. I know they have their eyes on it. The studios that they work for have their eyes on it. But directly, I have not. I would think that, streaming being the future of television, broadcast television especially, that they're eagerly looking at this and saying, okay, what's the reaction? Is this going to work with broadcast television to stream the show as well, as opposed to put it on a digital platform like NBC.com? Now it carries Peacock now carries what we used to have on our app or NBC.com. That's how you access the show. And I believe it's the future, whether it's in the next year or the next 5 years. This is the future of serial and series television.
Ken, before you go, a couple of days ago, apparently there's been some huddling with the Television Academy and the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences about where the Emmy Awards should go, both primetime and daytime. Any thoughts about what they've come up with? I have to say, after reading the press release about how they want to restructure the Daytime Emmy Awards and the prime by genre, where programming is determined by or is nominated by genre. Any sense about where they're going with this?
Yes, I'm glad for the changes. There are many. I think they're in the right direction, so that it's a level playing field, Simon. You know that daytime drama is competing against daytime drama as opposed to, Hulu, Netflix, and other specials that are in daytime or in primetime. You've kind of got to keep apples with apples and oranges with oranges. So I think these changes are good and appropriate and timely.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about – why do you think Days has lasted as it has? Because a number of years ago, there was a lot of scuttlebutt. Days may be on the chopping block. General Hospital may be on the chopping block. Young and the Restless may be on the chopping block. Bold and the Beautiful and so forth. Do you see what's happened since as sort of, there's life in this genre yet?
Yes, I do see it. Obviously, 10, 11 years ago, these rumors were rampant, and things did happen. We lost quite a few. We lost four big soaps within a year or two at the beginning of past decade, but things are rosier today. The daytime dramas are like a tent pole in the middle of the day for each network, and are still vital. So there's nothing like soaps, as you call them, daytime dramas. They are, you know, a genre in and of themselves. A lot of primetime shows in the past used us or used daytime drama, serial drama as a model, you know, going back to Dynasty, Knott's Landing, Dallas, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, serial drama, continuing drama is still very viable. And, you know, it's been, how do I put it, a validation of this belief of mine that, you know, the viewers are still there. There's still an appetite for the four soaps that have survived, and I hope there will be for many years to come.
Incidentally, what do you think about the fact that YouTube is now presenting episodes of past daytime dramas, such as Search for Tomorrow, Brighter Day, Edge of Night? People can now see how this art form evolved in the 50s and the 60s and so on.
I think it's great. You know, we would love to do the same. There are some research and development that has to be done before we start going into our archives and putting them on YouTube. But we're looking at it. I think it's great. I think it's great that the old shows like Edge of Night, I don't know if Dark Shadows is there, Search for Tomorrow, are you know, being replayed. I could go on and on. The original title for Edge of Night was Edge of Darkness, and my mother, who was then working in sales, said to the writers of the show, Procter & Gamble, well, you know, Edge of Darkness is kind of clumsy. Why don't we call it Edge of Night? And it stuck. And there are many such stories about Betty Corday, who was a great titler. She was able to look at the inception of a show and say, well, why don't we call it, you know, instead of As the Earth Turns, why don't we call it As the World Turns? And that stuck. I can go on and on, but I'm off topic here. I think it's great. I think it's great that the old shows are still viable.
For sure. And I know that you are a music supervisor also, and some wonderful composers came out of the daytime drama world. Paul Taubman, who I thought wrote one of the great TV themes of all time, that theme from Edge of Night, one of the great fanfares to start the show, was terrific. And Robert Cobert, who passed away, I think, a year or two ago, a terrific composer for his work with Dan Curtis. Dark Shadows was the show that opened up his career in a big way.
The music, you know, composers, there are quite a few well-known composers that, how do I put this, will respond in the daytime pool. The music on the show is very important. If you were able to watch the show without the music, it wouldn't be the same animal. But at the same time, you cannot be aware of the music. It's like the frame for this wonderful picture we're writing. We don't want to look at the frame. We want to look at the picture. And as composer on the show since 1975, 77, that's the caveat, the number one rule I have to pay attention to is, you know, you can't bang the drum too loud. You can't have the brass playing in your face when you're trying to do a soft, dramatic, or romantic scene. So, again, music is vital and important in daytime drama, as it is in many drama, but at the same time, it can't be calling attention to itself.
Yeah, great art form, both the composing of the music in daytime drama and where you use it. Absolutely can. A Very Salem Christmas, the first daytime Days of Our Lives made-for-TV movie. You can now catch it on Peacock. Again, it's NBC Universal's mega content service. You can find it on smart TV sets and smart devices, also in many areas of the country on a local cable system. And remember, Days of Our Lives, every weekday afternoon, check your local listing for the NBC station area and where they play it. If you want more details about Days of Our Lives, the TV series, go to NBC.com. And for more about A Very Salem Christmas and the miniseries Beyond Salem, go to www.peacocktv.com. It's www.peacocktv.com. Ken Corday, executive producer, Emmy winner for Days of Our Lives, thank you so much for coming on. It's a delight to have you with us. And from us to all of you, your writers, your series cast, crew, et cetera, have a wonderful holiday season and all the greatest in 2022.
Thank you, Simon. It was my pleasure. And thanks for speaking so quickly and getting all of that information out to everyone. It's important. And I wish you happy holidays, and hopefully we speak soon.
Let's make it happen, for sure, Ken. Take care. All the greatest.
All right, Simon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care now. Ken Corday, executive producer of Days of Our Lives, joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, coming your way from Castle Rock, Colorado, the executive producer of When Hope Calls, which has just made the move to a new network. It does so tomorrow night, GAC Family. We'll have him on after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com. Together, reach over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Music on the Couch. That's Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, and that's 6 p.m. Pacific. That's Music on the Couch, Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second 90 minutes of, our second half hour, I should say, of Tomorrow Be Told. I can welcome those of you joining us at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Happy Friday to all of you. Simon Applebaum with you along for the ride from New Haven, York, where it is now 59 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guests over the next 60 minutes, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll have our classic trivia question coming your way near the top of the hour, and if you have the answer, you could win a great group of prizes, five of them, the most ever offered at one shot. Brian Bird from When Hope Calls, coming your way at GAC Family for Season 2 tomorrow night. He'll join us from Colorado after we talk about the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, believe it or not, Audible has finally come up with an audiobook that is a holiday tale. It's called The Best Worst Christmas. It's by Kate Forster, and you can get it right now as part of your trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is, this time of the year, any time of the year, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, etc. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, a one-month trial, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, important health and wellness information. Plus, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, you get two audiobooks for the trial of one, including one of the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman, one-man shows. And right now, the offer I told you about a couple of weeks ago, it's back. If you decide to become a member, skip the trial and become a member of Audible.com. For your first 3 months, it's only $5.95 a month. You save on the price. That's $5.95 a month for your first 3 months of subscription. So for all the details, whether the one-month trial or the special three-month offer, $5.95 a month for your subscription, go to audibletrial.com, televised. In February of last year, Hallmark Movies Now, which is Hallmark's streaming service, that's their service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, produced their first original series called When Hope Calls, the offshoot of the very popular When Calls the Heart. Well, it's taken quite a while, but tomorrow night, When Hope Calls finally delivers its second season. However, not on Hallmark Movies Now, on GAC Family, formerly Great American Country. And here to talk all about that and what's in store for season two, one of its executive producers joining us live from Castle Rock, Colorado, Brian Bird. Brian, happy holiday season to you. Brian, are you there? All right, Brian, for some reason, we are not getting you on, so you have to call back, 646-652-2906, and as soon as I hear you're ready to go or see you're ready to go, we'll get you on. So hang on there, everybody. Brian will join us shortly from Castle Rock, Colorado. Apparently, we're having a little bit of a glitch in getting him on. So, Brian, you hearing me? Give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and as soon as I see you're ready to go, we'll get you on. In the meantime, let's go forward with our classic trivia question of the week. Second time we're offering it. And if you are first with the correct answer, we have five, count them, five prizes in store for you. We've got two books. We've got the Betty White Retrospective from Ray Richmond. That's Betty White, One Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life. Next year, by the way, very early next month, Betty White celebrates 100, young and great. And we have the unofficial Hocus Pocus Cookbook. We have the new DVD of 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir. That's the special that was on Monday night on many PBS stations, on Thursday night, last night on BYU TV, with bonus material, incidentally, a Freak Brothers t-shirt, and the Loud House crayon set, courtesy of Nickelodeon. Here's the question. On what ABC series did John Ritter play a cop? On what ABC series did John Ritter play a cop? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your name and where you're from. First with a great answer, all five prizes can be and will be yours. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post a question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play in, and all the very best. And now joining us live from Castle Rock, Colorado, from When Hope Calls, executive producer Brian Bird. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. So how did this journey go from Hallmark Movies Now in season one to GAC Family tomorrow night?
Well, you know, it's been a bit of a long journey here in the last year and a half since we finished season one of When Hope Calls for Hallmark Movies Now. You know, there is lots of room in the marketplace for more family and, you know, friendly television like When Hope Calls and When Calls the Heart. And so the opportunity to move from Hallmark Movies Now to the GAC Family Network, a brand new network that Bill Abbott has started, you know, for us was a big blessing. It's the Wild West out there right now with all of the streaming services and all of the original content being made, Simon, on all these different platforms. And so we're just happy to have a brand new home for the town of Brookfield and all these fine citizens in Brookfield, bringing stories of hope and uplift to the audiences. And so it's been a long journey getting here, but we're so thankful and grateful to be launching season two with two episodes set around the Christmas holiday in the town of Brookfield. So that all happens tomorrow night on GAC.
And we're going to get to more about how you designed this Christmas movie or this two-parter, if you will, because they're a series, in a moment.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes long-running series work is how they handle the second year. The first year they get established, you get to know as a viewer the characters, the main plot, how things go. The second year is always where the development of the characters, the development of the storylines, the development of the attitude of the series happen. What did you learn season one that you were determined, let's grow this, let's expand this, or let's maintain this in season two?
Sure, sure. Well, here's the thing about, you know, television like When Hope Calls. There is a massively underserved audience out there looking for stories that, you know, give them uplift, that give them a sense of a happy ending and of a community of sacrifice, redemption, stories of redemption. And, you know, what we learned in season one of When Hope Calls is that the audience is there. They're starved to death for this kind of content. And not too many people are serving them food these days. You know, when you bring, when you find an island full of starving people and you bring them food, they love you for it. And that's what we've discovered with these shows. You know, everywhere else you turn, there are, you know, God bless them, but zombies and vampires and crystal meth dealers and mafiosos and dead body shows dripping with cynicism. And you won't find a cynical bone in the body of When Hope Calls or the citizens of Brookfield. Everybody there, they're not perfect people, but everybody there is pulling for each other. And, you know, at a time when we're going through a cataclysm of virus and pandemic and, you know, deeply polarized populace in our culture, you know, stories that bring people together are deeply meaningful to them. And in season one, what we found is that there is a big audience there, and we knew we had to continue this show. The show got really decent numbers and decent ratings in season one. We started out on Hallmark Movies Now, the streaming service for the Hallmark Channel, and then we actually moved to broadcast in a sort of second helping of When Hope Calls, and the show actually did surprisingly well for second helpings, for reruns, essentially, from the streamer to the network, to the broadcast. And those numbers were strong enough where our partners, Brad Crevoy and Alfonso Moreno and Michael Lennon Jr. And myself, we knew that there was a big audience out there. And so the big lesson for us was not so much about how to evolve the show in any big way, but the fact that the show had to continue. And so through the pandemic, we searched high and low for an opportunity to bring this show back to life and back to the audience. And we found that in the brand new platform, Great American Channels. It's called Great American Channels Family Television, GAC Family TV. And Bill Abbott, and they were such huge fans of this idea that we all put our heads together and said, let's do this. Let's get this rolling.
How do you make an ongoing series deal with the theme of redemption, the theme of can-do spirit and so forth, and make it inventive? Somebody like Earl Hamner Jr.,
right,
for example, and everyone who worked on The Waltons, which just got the revival,
right,
made-for-TV movie on the CW, which did quite well and got some good reviews too, was able to do that with his writing team for 9 years on CBS.
Yes.
How do you do it? What is there sort of a methodology or some sort of practice that you and your fellow,
yes,
executive producers take on so that the themes come across as realistic and yet bring on certain ideals and certain attitudes that
sure,
spotlight the ability of people to redeem themselves, the ability of people to, you know, come together in a crazy time and work through things?
Sure. Yeah, happy to answer that. You know, look, I cut my teeth on the writing and producing staff of Touched by an Angel, which did this also for 9 years on CBS. And at one point, you know, was being watched by over 20 million people, which are, you know, in astounding numbers compared to what we are all looking at today in this media universe that has so many different places to go now for content. But, you know, what we always said back in those days and what Michael Landon Jr. and I said when we created When Calls the Heart, and now as we've now evolved that show and into this whole universe of storytelling, is that every man, every woman, every child has a deeply hungry, you know, has a deep hunger for redemption, right? We're all broken people, really. You know, we're all wandering around looking, you know, for ways to do better in our lives and overcome obstacles or the challenges or even the mistakes that we make in this world. And what I think people are hungry for is what they've been hungry for 5,000 years of human history. You know, when the little cave children, their parents to tell them a story back in prehistoric days, well, what do? They started making cave paintings on the wall for those kids. People are starved for story. People are starved for heroes' journeys. And what we try to do on these shows, like we did with Touched by an Angel, like they did on The Waltons, like so many shows have done, at least in past years, in past decades, is that you want to try to create a sense of heroism in your characters, but also in the audience. You know, every person has a hunger to be a hero in one way or another, a hero in their own story. And the acronym that we use on these shows is HERO for humor, emotion, romance, and optimism. And people are flocking to these shows because they are so starved to death. You know, when you turn on your TV and you feel like you got to take a shower every time you finish a show, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing. And at a time when many other media companies and media platforms are offering people an appetite of razor blades and broken glass, a menu of broken glass and razor blades, we're trying to provide some soul food. And we believe and this is not revolutionary. This is what we did on Touched by an Angel. It's what they did on The Waltons. It's what, you know, was done for decades and decades. And then somehow I think the whole industry has collective amnesia about this kind of content. People want this content. The fact that When Calls the Heart is a bona fide cable hit. In fact, we last season in season 8, we actually beat the zombies of The Walking Dead for the first time in our 9 years or 8 years at the time on the air. In the ratings, When Calls the Heart was in the top 10 of all of cable. Well, it's not because we're geniuses. And When Calls the Heart and When Hope Calls as television shows didn't come about because we're geniuses. We're trying to do good work and good creative TV, but it's because the audience is not getting it anywhere else. And when you, like I said, when you bring people food and they're starving and you bring them what they need, man, they will love you forever. And that's exactly, it's no more complicated than that.
And incidentally, Brian, another more recent CBS show that tried to do that too is God Friended Me, which was produced here in New York. And I thought it was very interesting how they tried to showcase the ability of people to rise above, as U2 says in that Spider-Man musicals number, despite whatever circumstances
yes.
they have. And it was a very, very inventive show, which could have lasted longer
it
than
was.
Yeah, like two seasons out.
Yeah. Yes, it's, you know, I loved God Friended Me, and it was really, you know, God bless them. It was an update, you know, it was an updated contemporary version, sort of a contemporary version of Touched by an Angel, told in an anthology genre with some continuing arcs for the main characters. But, you know, I love that show. I love anybody that's trying to do this kind of work. The big challenge, Ken knows about, you know, everybody you have on your show knows this, who works in this business. It's almost impossible today to launch a new you know, media project and get on people's radar screens because, you know, they have a million ways to turn and they have a million messages coming at them from, you know, all of this original content. It's a fantastic thing to offer people choices. And I love that. I love that there's so much original content, but breaking through the noise of all of that content is really challenging. It takes some sort of elixir, some sort of cracking the code with viewers to get on their radar screens and to grow an organic present audience, an organic fan base around your work. And when you find a grassroots fan base that will support you and cheer you on, and you cheer them on back, when you support them, the fan base, by talking back to them, it's a golden ticket for any show to break through all the noise and to, you know, create a sense of community around that show. That's what the Waltons had. That's what Touched by an Angel had back in the day. That's what When Calls the Heart has. And that's now what When Hope Calls has. And there are so many people that are thrilled, so thrilled that When Hope Calls is coming back now to television, starting tomorrow night, that we're hearing from all of them all over again, just like we did at the beginning of When Calls the Heart. And this fan base, they call themselves, we didn't name them this, they named themselves Hardys, right? They're like Trekkies on steroids. They are so fanatical about our show and so passionate about our shows that now the Hardys are following, you know, following us on both When Calls Heart, and they have now followed us on When Hope Calls, and they're even many of them are also naming themselves Hopefuls. Now, this is an amazing thing. You know, you can't You can't buy this. You can't spend enough money to create marketing around your content in order to grow a fan base like that. And the Hardys and the Hopefuls are now in big love with the idea of another season of When Hope Calls, and we're just thrilled to be able to honor them in that way.
And the second season of When Hope Calls breaks through on GAC Family, the network formerly known as Great American Country, tomorrow night. It's a two-parter. First episode is 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and immediately followed by the second half of this opener at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Brian Bird is one of the executive producers of the series, which also includes its executive producer gang, Brad Cravoy, Mike Lennon Jr., who we've had on the show before, Alfonso Marrero, who is the creator of the series. We had him on last February when the series began on the Hallmark Movies Now, and a whole bunch of others. Brian Bird is with us live from Castle Rock, Colorado, this half hour on Smart Be Televised. Happy you're aboard, too, on this Friday afternoon. Simon App, I'm with you live from New York. 59 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment or mini-news with Brian, well, give us a call, 646-652-2906, and interact with us, or use our chat room, SimonApple049. Remember, we got a Christmas week triple-header shows for you next Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Coming up on Monday, we'll have some predictions about 2022 television and what it might bring you with Hub Entertainment Research Principal John Geigengack. And then from the new series, the new network that just launched, the hip-hop culture service Polaris, we will have the founder and principal chairman, Raman J. Dukes. We had him on earlier this fall. The network is now running on Vizio Smart TV sets as part of their array of new features networks. Then on Wednesday, we'll have the general manager of another mega content service on the rise, First Look Media's Topic, general manager Ryan Chinatry. Also, the chief product officer of Wide Orbit. He's got some interesting predictions about TV 2022. That's Will Opperman. And finally, the host and producer of a special making its way on the Roku channel and other smart TV sets and devices, Rebecca Gitana from Healing Through the House. That's next Monday and Wednesday, and also next Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. As you mentioned earlier, this two-parter, two-episode opener is also a Christmas fable. How did you try to make, when you do a Christmas story, you always try to make it different from everybody else. How is this different from everything else out there? How does this break through, as you like to say?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, because there's a lot of Christmas content out there, original Christmas content. Last time I checked, 137 original Christmas movies on TV this season. So, part of the beauty of a place like Brookfield is that it's populated by a lot of people and a lot of characters. These shows are very much ensemble shows, and so building stories at holiday time around those towns is not all that challenging because there's so many ways you can go. The town of Brookfield, sort of the center point of Brookfield, is the New Hope Orphanage, and it's a place where we get to focus on the children in the town because many of the children in the town are part and live at this orphanage run by Lillian Walsh in the town, played by Morgan Cohan, and there's a lot of incredible human stakes when you have a town that is filled with orphans, right? And it becomes a gathering spot for orphans. And so there's lots of stories to tell. You don't need much inspiration, much more inspiration than Charles Dickens for stories at Christmas time when you have a town that has orphans in it. But I think one of the big new wrinkles in Brookfield, and one of the things that, to be honest, personally, I'm most excited about, was that these two episodes, Christmas episodes, provided us an opportunity to bring Lori Loughlin back to television. And I had an opportunity to be there for the filming of these scenes with Lori, and it was so moving to us to be able to, host that return, her return to television after her, journey the last few years, and all that she and her family have gone through. And one of the things that these shows really do a good job of is showing grace to people, right? And I often say that, you know, grace is a two-sided coin. And on one side of the coin is justice, and on the other side of the coin is mercy. And the idea that we could provide a landing spot for Lori as she's getting her life back together after the last couple of years, in a town, in a world, in a storytelling universe that all comes from the same place. You know, When Hope Calls is a spinoff show from When Calls the Heart. It's the same time period. They are neighboring towns, the town of Hope Valley in When Calls the Heart and the town of Brookfield in When Hope Calls. They're neighboring towns in the same time period. So we had no challenge in terms of storytelling to bringing Lori's character of Abigail Stanton that first launched on When Hope Calls When Calls the Heart, to When Hope Calls. She started in Hope Valley, and now she's continuing here in Brookfield. And it was a perfect opportunity for us to grow these two Christmas episodes, you know, around that orphanage, but also around Lori. And this is not a big spoiler. This has been pretty big news. Very few news outlets have not covered her return to television on these shows. And so it's been our honor and our privilege to do that and to show her grace, you know, the real life person of Lori Loughlin, some grace, but also to let that cross over into the fictional world that we've created.
Yeah. We have about a minute left, Brian. Any thoughts about where you and your producers see 2022 going? Do you see are you always trying to plan perhaps the possibility of another spinoff series, but this time featuring the characters of this city in Brookfield? Or do you see trying to start another series with, let's say, a totally different town or a totally different type of family-friendly environment?
We, Simon, we are incredibly optimistic. We've been talking, Brad Cravoy and Michael Landon and Alfonso Moreno and John Tinker, our showrunner on When Calls the Heart. We've been talking about the possibility of even expanding this whole storytelling universe even more. We don't have anything official we can talk about quite yet, but we absolutely have an appetite for that and are excited about that. And we have in our hands the ability, the rights to all of Jeanette Oak, who is the original author of the books around When Calls the Heart and also When Hope Calls. We have in our hands all of her work, all of her books set in this time period. And so we have lots of ways in which we can go, and we're excited about the future. And this incredible time we're in, Simon, you know this as well as any of us. There is a gold rush happening right now in original television, in original content for television. With all of these streaming platforms, all of these cable channels and other, you know, platforms wanting to create original content because they're competing for eyeballs and they're competing for hearts and minds and subscriptions, probably the best word to use. They're competing for all of those things. And so the best way to compete is to give people something that they're hungry for. And we will ride those opportunities as long as we can, because and wherever they go, because we love doing this. We do this. It's a passion for us. It's a labor of love. We will continue producing this. We're happy to wear this as a badge of honor. It's not all that hip in Hollywood to make this kind of content, but we can care less about what's hip in Hollywood. We care about what's hip in the heartland, and that's where these shows are intended for, and we will make this content forever and ever and ever until nobody wants us anymore. So we're excited about the future. I appreciate that question.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. When Hope Calls, Season 2, begins tomorrow night, 8 p.m., then the next episode, 9 p.m. immediately after, on GAC Family, formerly Great American Country. Check your local news for where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.gacfamily.com. When Hope Calls, tomorrow night, second season premiere, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Brian Bird, one of the executives of the series, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and your entire cast and crew for making it happen. Season 2, hopefully the continuation of many, many more seasons to come. And from all of us again to all of you, a very, very happy holiday season and the greatest in 2022.
Thank you, Simon. Great to be with you.
Same here, Brian. Take care and enjoy the weekend.
You too, brother. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Blessing.
Brian Bird joining us live from Castle Rock, Colorado. And when we come back, you'll meet two people who are responsible for one of the newest series on Here TV called Demon Hunter. You will meet the folks behind that show, Tim O'Leary and Robert Rice, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tomorrow at high noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, it's Post Time with the Greek. Check out what the Greek thinks about week 15 of the National Football League, the latest on the NBA, the NHL, college football bowl season just got started earlier today, and much, much more. Post Time with the Greek, tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of the Promo TV's current and future. Tomorrow will be televised. Now in year 15 on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us Friday afternoon. Thanks for wrapping up the week with us. And we have another great pair of guests coming your way in our final 30 minutes. So give them a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you are listening across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Plus, use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's been a number of years since we have focused on one of the first services aimed at the gay and lesbian community called Here TV. In some places, it's a pay service. In some places, it's an expanded basic service. In addition to running on cable systems, it is now running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. One of their latest productions is an adventure saga called Demon Hunter, and you're about to meet the pair of people making it largely responsible. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer of Demon Hunter, Tim O'Leary. Hi, Tim.
Oh, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And joining both of us is your partner in work and life. He is the co-star of Demon Hunter as well as a producer, Robert Rice. Hello, Robert.
Hi, nice to be here.
Same here. Tim, we'll start with you. How did Demon Hunter come to be?
You know, it's funny. When I first came to L.A., I moved here from New York. Rob and I were living in New York, and New York is a very, very, very grounded city. So going from there to L.A., I was sort of surprised with how L.A. feels. This is going to sound hokey, and I apologize, but a little magical. There feels something sort of supernatural about Los Angeles. And I wanted to do a horror series. I wanted to do sort of my homage to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I wanted it to be full of queer characters. And I was sort of, you know, grasping for what exactly the story would be. And when I was really brainstorming it, Rob was working with another friend of ours where they were creating an app. So there was just a lot of app talk in our house. It was all app all the time. And so I sort of blended the idea of an app with a horror series and came up with the concept of two demon hunters who use an app as, you know, gigging, because we're all gigging in this economy, to get people to hire them, come to their houses, and eradicate any demonic presences that might be bothering them.
Robert, given the fact that the CW, for example, has done a number of vampire series, the Vampire Diaries, the originals, now Legacies, you now have AMC about to get into the vampire world with Interview with the Vampire. Anne Rice, sad to say, passed away earlier this week, and Mayfair Witches. Did you and Tim try to sell the show to the CW or AMC or USA or other networks, as well as the Netflix and so forth of the world, who are getting more into these type of supernatural genre stories? And if not, or if so, how did Here TV get in the picture?
Well, the first thing that's kind of interesting about Demon Hunter itself is that there are actually no vampires in it. We cover pretty much every demonic entity except for vampires, because we figured those bases have been covered pretty well by all the networks you just mentioned. But yeah, basically the way this came about is we created it in 2019, and then obviously COVID came in 2020 and remains. And so we've been in post. And then once we had our first few episodes done, we started submitting them to film festivals. And we ended up connecting with Here TV at the Cinema Diverse Festival in Palm Springs. We had the screening of the first three episodes there. They were able to see them. And then we ended up having a long conversation at the bar later. And it turned into talks about distribution.
And I'll say that I've been a fan of Here TV for, at this point, I think 16 years.
Yes.
I remember exactly where I was when I read in the trade that Here TV was happening. So this is back, I want to say, 2004. And the first article talked very specifically about one of their flagship shows called Dante's Cove, which was a sort of a dark, steamy horror fantasy show about witches, but all LGBT characters. And I just remember reading that and thinking, that is everything I wanted to see. That's just everything I love in one package. And so ever since then, I've been a huge fan of Here TV. Dante's Cove was undeniably a huge influence on Demon Hunter. And when we got to meet David Hilburn from Here TV at Cinema Diverse, I started blabbing a little bit too enthusiastically about my love for Here TV. I might have embarrassed myself a little bit, but the chemistry was just there right away, and we knew that it would be a good home. And even when we were filming it, we were saying when we were done, we were going to reach out to Here TV. We just didn't think it would be so easy that the universe would kind of hand us a meeting by both of us being in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
Before the FX people get mad at me, I should have also pointed out what we do in the Shadows, which is the Emmy-nominated vampire comedy also. So that there, FX is also in the vampire hunt, too.
Yeah, and a brilliant one at that.
Yeah,
too.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
That show.
Yeah. Tim, how is Here TV, before I get into Demon Hunter, how is Here TV doing? Because until we received a press release on your series, we had not heard from Here TV in a very, very long time. We had covered Dante's Cove. We had covered other Here shows. This is like the first time in like 8-9 years we've heard from anything about Here TV. We've heard from other networks aimed at the gay and lesbian, like Reverie and some other services. How is Here doing? What are they up to?
I mean, it seems like with the recent renaissance of streaming services, Here TV has kind of redoubled its efforts to create a lot more original content. I think you would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, from our perspective, you know, we connected with them, and when we spoke with David, it was made clear to us that they were really, as Tim said, sort of redoubling their efforts. They were really like going kind of gung-ho into creating new content, acquiring content. And I know they also work, you know, in distribution as well.
Right.
So you'll see, like, for example, you'll see Demon Hunter on Here TV, the streaming platform. You'll also see it on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Prime. So it will be available in many different locations. So I think, and I know that they're developing other things, which we're not involved with, so we can't speak to them. But I know they're developing other projects as we speak.
That's one of the hardest parts, is because, you know, LA is a very small community. And, of course, we know a lot of people, actors and producers, and queer LA is an even smaller community. So, you know, people talk, and I actually know a lot of the really, really cool projects that Here TV is developing, and it's very hard to not talk about them, but we're not involved, so we do not have any permission to talk. But definitely, I think people will be very, very pleasantly surprised by what Here TV rolls out in the next year.
Mm-hmm. Here TV, by the way, was one of the first programming services of any kind dealing with the gay and lesbian community, and also transgender community, too, along the way. And one of their latest programs is Demon Hunter, and that's what we're talking about this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised with executive producer Tim O'Leary and co-star and producer Robert Wright. They both join us live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, and we're happy you're joining in for the ride, too. Simon Adler with you from the other side of the U.S. of A., Nueva York, 57 degrees now from the bottom of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, ring that call in, 646-652-2906. or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you missed our classic trivia question near the top of the hour, we're going to bring it back before this top of the hour comes your way before we wrap the show. So stay tuned. We have 5 prizes in play, and you could be the winner if you know the answer to our question. So stay tuned for that. And remember, next week, our special Christmas week triple header of shows, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's December 20th, 22nd, 23rd, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Robert, what is Demon Hunter all about, and what's the character you play?
Sure, yeah. Well, Demon Hunter is basically about two mediums who create an app to hunt demons and make some money in the process. My character comes in the third episode. My character's name is Harold. He is a telepath who pretends he's a medium. So he holds seances for people and tells them what they want to hear from their dead relatives, family, and friends, makes the money in the process. And the Demon Hunters bring Harold in for a very special situation that they can't handle on their own, and they need the aid of a telepath for. So that's where my character comes in. And one of the things I enjoy the most about my character is that he gets into full goth drag for his seances. So the introduction of Harold is very amusing to me and hopefully to everyone who watches it when you see how he sort of handles his work. But yeah, he doesn't come in until episode 3, but it's a fun introduction. Tim, is there if you want to add anything about Harold in the show?
Well, I will say, when we were developing this, I wanted to do something really fun for Rob. Rob is a great comedic actor, and we were very clear that we wanted it to be a horror comedy series, so we wanted to keep some things light. And, nothing is, I don't want to swear, but nothing is more fun than characters that have a little B-I-T-C-H in them. And so we brought that element from Rob's character. And he also has a few steamy scenes with one of our extraordinarily handsome leads that I got to direct. So I got to call action and watch my husband kiss a guy who is way more attractive than I am.
That is not true.
By the way, Robert, how do you balance, how do you juggle the on-camera role as one of the co-stars with the off-camera role, being one of the producers, or one of the key producers?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you asking that. It's interesting because, like, so much of the work is done before we even get to set. You know, we raised funds, we planned everything out, scheduled everything. So I was involved with a lot of that. And then days where I wasn't shooting, I even got so far as, like, being the catering guy. Like, I would actually cook meals for our cast and crew and bring them to set and stuff. But on the days where I was actually on camera, we had a wonderful team. We have 2 other producers we work with, Zach Nickum and James Stanley. And we also have, like, just a whole suite of folks who were just so wonderful and helpful. So on days when I would be on camera and I knew I would have to be really focused on that, I would pass off a lot of the duties and the rest of our team would, you know, take that up so I could focus on, you know, just being in character and just doing what I needed to do on camera. And so I honestly, like, having that team really makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Tim, was this a 2-person affair, or did you bring in other writers or directors? And if so, how do you tie them into to both you and Robert's vision of the characters, of the storyline, and so on?
I'm going to tell you the most annoying Hollywood cliche, but this whole thing came about when Zach and James, the aforementioned producers, came over and we had a party in our pool and we were just drinking. It was a beautiful Saturday afternoon. The 4 of us had just produced another show, but it wasn't really of us. We were just sort of brought on to produce it. So then we decided we really wanted to do something, the 4 of us. And we were all talking about what we wanted to make, and we were all on the same page. We've been friends for quite some time, and, you know, we always bonded over nerdy things, so it was very easy to sort of walk that path together. And then Zach Nickum is a fantastic writer, so I asked him if he would write it with me. And we really operated like a very standard writer's room in Hollywood. We had a big old whiteboard where we broke down all the episodes. We kind of put our wish list of all the monsters that we were hoping we would be able to afford, or that we were hoping we would be able to include. As with anything, you know, we got to do maybe 60% of everything we wanted to do. So, you know, there's room for more if all goes according to plan. And then we wrote the whole season. And once we cast it, then we were off to the races.
Most shows of this kind often like to tackle social themes, or they like to tackle explore certain aspects of a genre, whether it's horror, supernatural, psychic phenomena, et cetera, et cetera. In putting this together, were there certain social themes or issues or things you wanted to develop in the course of the plotting?
I'm very glad you asked that, actually. One of the things that we wanted to do was show a world that had what we've been calling unremarkable diversity. So everyone in the cast, no one really quite looks exactly like each other, but they form this family, despite their differences. And what's more, we decided to go one step further with that concept. And since Demon Hunter takes place in a world where there are monsters and the public knows about it, we're already in alternate universe territory. So what Zach and I decided is that this was going to be a world without sexism, without racism, without homophobia. Everyone is just sort of accepted for who they are. So it's sort of an aspirational, utopian ideal, except for the part where there are monsters killing everybody all the time.
We're speaking with the pair behind Demon Hunter, now on Here TV. That's the programming service that's available on cable out systems and now available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We are talking with the executive producer of the series, Tim O'Leary, and the co-star and producer, Robert Rice. They're both live with us from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. So I'm with you live from Nueva York, and if you have a question or comment or any minutes with them, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Stay tuned. Classic trivia question one more time coming your way after this interview before we end at the top of the hour. So stay tuned. 5 prizes in store for you, and it could be used. For both of you, you introduced this at the recent Comic-Con. I believe it was in San Diego. What's been the reaction from them to what you're doing?
Yeah, it seemed like people were really into the idea of it. You know, Demon Hunter is one of those things that people have been saying ever since we came to L.A., I mean, long before we came to L.A., but we've been hearing since we moved here, like, if you want to see something, make it yourself. Like, if you feel like something doesn't exist that you want or something you're passionate about, just make it yourself. And so that's really been sort of the philosophy behind Demon Hunter since the beginning. And what has been fun about that is anytime we sort of have mentioned it to people, people have gotten excited about it. Once we actually started, once we went into production and then started, like, releasing pieces of it, people got kind of excited about it. Once we started showing it in film festivals, people got excited about it. And we're like, I guess people actually want to see this too. It's not just us. And so, like, it was the same with Comic-Con. You know, I presented it at a panel, and the panel was actually all about creating a geek community, especially during the time of COVID when we weren't really allowed to be around each other physically. So it was all about creating virtual community, all about, like, kind of it, with a little bit of a focus on mental health too. And what we talked about was just how Demon Hunter is just kind of this, as Tim said, it's sort of this kind of utopian ideal, I guess, in the sense that there's no, you know, racism, homophobia, et cetera. But what it really is more so is about a group of people who become friends, who have all these kind of talents individually and come together and, like, and they're fun and they're all kind of sexy and everyone's just having a good time and, like, they deal with challenges like everyone else. But, like, everything, it just feels like that sense of community that I think that so many people are longing for, especially in the wake of the pandemic. So when I presented it at Comic-Con, we definitely got a reaction from people. They seemed really excited about it. They loved the queer element. They loved the diversity of it. But they also just loved that it was yet more sort of geek content that really, like, is sort of unabashed in what it is. It's funny. It's sexy. It's queer. And I think people are looking forward to it. And again, like, the reaction even with, like, film festivals and stuff, like, we got to watch it with an audience at that Palm Springs Film Festival where we met the Here TV team, and people really liked it. You know, we got big laughs in the audience, and
that was our first time seeing it with an audience, so it was nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
when we,
for real.
When those lights went down and the show began, I was, oh, boy, were my palms sweating. I'm not sure how people were going to react.
Yeah.
What do both of you think about operating in an era of television where genre characters, whether superhero, vampires, werewolves, et cetera, can be gay, can be lesbian, can be transgender, can be deaf, can be blind, can be hard of hearing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's sort of a matter of fact kind of thing. Like, oh, I happen to be, I'm a superhero that happens to be blank. I'm a super, I'm a villainous that happens to be blank. I'm a, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so amazing to see the sort of vast sea change. I got to L.A. in late 2014, and the world in terms of representation on television and in film could not be more different. I still think there's way more, you know, that we can do. I think we're not there yet. I don't think we're at a place where we're seeing as much representation as we could be. But on the other hand, you know, it's one of those things where, like, 2 years ago when Batwoman premiered and it was a gay woman as the lead of a superhero show, and it was almost, it barely caused a ripple, which is almost shocking in that it didn't get as much attention as it would have, you know, 10 years ago. It wouldn't have even been on the air 10 years ago.
Right.
But so, you know, I think it's amazing that we're moving into this new era. And, you know, it's like you're seeing this kind of representation pop up in shows where it used to not exist. Like, Rob and I are big fans of Umbrella Academy. And there's a character in it that is, I guess he's probably pansexual,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he has definitely solidly has relationships with men. And it's just in this big sci-fi superhero huge budget show with a lot of marquee names. And it's, you know, we're moving into this great new era. But again, there's still something missing. And a lot of that is occasionally with shows that are on the CW or you know, of that kind of ilk, it does fall a little bit into tokenizing, where you just have one character that is the LGBT, you know, element of that show, and then they have to sort of represent the entire queer community through that one character.
Mm-hmm.
So with Demon Hunter, what we wanted to show is that queer people are often friends with other queer people, and queer is however you define it. We have characters that are straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, pansexual, fluid. So what we're trying to do is create a sort of a community of queer superheroes, essentially, because we haven't quite seen that yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the big thing also is, like, you know, our creative choice is to make it unremarkable.
Right.
You know, obviously there's room for every single kind of story. Like, there's a story that it's about the gay experience or, you know, black experience or whatever it may be. But, you know, with ours, like, we really just, that was our angle that we wanted to take, where, like, anybody could be kind of a part of this world and a part of this team, and it's, like, what they contribute is their talent and their skill and their personality, and it has nothing to do with really, the other part of that just is, and I think that's what was important to us for this particular story.
Yeah. Where do you see 2022 going for both of you in television? Another season of Demon Hunter, trying a different type of show? What is the coming year for 10 for both of you?
Oh, boy, is this a conversation we have over dinner all the time.
but, yeah, I think ultimately, like, you know, this is the first time Demon Hunter is going to go out into the world in this way. So, you know, a little bit of it is going to be seeing the reaction and how that goes. But, you know, we are absolutely open to a second season. We're also discussing potential feature options and sort of separate from Demon Hunter. So, yeah, we're keeping our options open as far as, like, what our next project may be, but everything is on the table still.
Right. We have, I would say, probably 3 or 4 irons in the fire, or rather, plates that are spinning. So now, I guess, to answer your question, 2022 really becomes about which one of those plates do we decide to keep up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and, you know, obviously, unfortunately, we can't talk too much about the other projects that we're working on. But we're hoping to see a lot of reaction to Demon Hunter, because, of course, we would love to do a season 2.
Yeah.
You know, the show was such a labor of love. We crowdfunded it in 2019,
yes.
And then we shot it mostly in 2019. We were going to do a few pickups in 2020, but something happened in early 2020
yeah.
that kind of threw a wrench into the works of that. But we were able to edit around it, fortunately. So, yeah, we would love to continue working on Demon Hunter, but we also have plenty of other stories that we like to tell. Demon Hunter is the flagship production of our production company, mm-hmm. Freaky Fighty Funny Films, and we have, you know, quite a few other things lined up. So,
yeah.
There you go. And you can see Demon Hunter right now on Hear TV. That's the programming service available on both cable operators, cable systems, as well as satellite and growing number of smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the series and the service online, go to HearTV.com. It's HERETV or onephrase.com. Demon Hunter now playing there and also playing on Amazon Prime as well. For more details about that, Amazon.com. Tim O'Leary, Robert Rice, thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on getting this series off the ground. Hopefully more seasons to come and more from both of you to come in the world of television. And maybe film and other entertainment forms as well. And again, for both of you, all the very best this coming year and a great holiday season too.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
You too.
Thank you for having us.
Very, very welcome. Take care. Enjoy the weekend and all the greatest.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Tim O'Leary and Robert Rice joining us live from Los Angeles. Now, one more time, our classic trivia question of the week. On what ABC series did John Ritter play a cop? On what ABC series did John Ritter play a cop? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. If you don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon. TWBT. This is UBC Simon, TWBT. I want to thank all of our guests for being here these last 90 minutes, all of you for tuning in. Remember, we've got our Christmas Whipple Harris starting on Monday with John Degengack from Hunter Entertainment Research with some very interesting forecasts of what 2022 television may bring you. And from Polaris, the new hip-hop culture network that just launched on Vizio Smart TV sets, founder and principal chairman back with us for the second time this fall, Raman J. Dukes. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, catch any time this weekend, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, all of our episodes this year so far are available to you on podcast on the iRadio Podcast Network. Also, many of our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. And remember, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guests and topics today? What's your thoughts about the future of television the rest of this year and beyond? Well, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And as always, when you respond, we respond back within 24 hours. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website maintenance provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is Guitars Bakes. Remember, our episodes are also available on our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. Tomorrow Be Televised brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. And get all the details, by the way, if you want to go right ahead and subscribe. You have the first 3 months of your subscription at only $5.95 a month. Makes a great holiday gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back with our Christmas Triple Header starting Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Remember, whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe. Make it fantastic. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, go over your medical situation, and then make a great choice, your choice, whatever that is. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.